In his new book, A Nation of Nations, A Great American Immigration Story, veteran NPR correspondent Tom Gelton assesses the impact and importance of the 1965 Immigration and Naturalization Act by interweaving the stories of a handful of immigrant families with the history and analysis of the immigration changes in America as a whole. The 50th anniversary of the 1965 Act is this month, and immigration continues to be a hot-button issue in American politics. Tom Gelton is a longtime NPR news correspondent. He's covered wars in Central America, the Middle East, and former Yugoslavia, as well as major national stories in the United States. His NPR reporting has won him 2 Overseas Press Club Awards, a George Polk Award, and a Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Award. Again, the name of the book is A Nation of Nations. It's a great pleasure to welcome Tom Gelton back to the roundtable. Tom, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Joe.
Very nice for you to be here. And the book is fascinating. What led you to it? Why did you want to look at this story?
I spent a lot of time overseas in the 80s and the 90s and, you know, covering foreign policy and national security issues. And I actually have for a long time been interested in turning my attention back to this country and to issues of American culture and identity. Maybe it goes back to my undergraduate years when I was studying anthropology, but I've long been interested in this. And the 1965 Immigration Act fundamentally transformed America in terms of culture and identity. And on its, and it just seemed to me that its 50th anniversary was a perfect time to take a kind of a fresh look at these old questions of what does it mean to be an American? What does the idea of America stand for? Is the United States a European country, or is it a country that is open to anyone who is, you know, ready to accept an American identity? And what is that identity? So the 1965 Immigration Act really brought in a whole new wave of Americans. And as I say, the anniversary is a perfect time to look at what that has done to the country, what has it meant for the country, how the ideas of being American have changed.
In the 50 years after its enactment, the foreign-born share of the population in this country tripled and shifted dramatically. And I'm hoping you can just give us a sense of exactly what the act did, because it certainly receives less notice and inspection than the Civil Rights Act, but it's, as you point out, the impact is huge.
Well, interesting. I was just down recently at the LBJ Library in Austin, Texas, and I was speaking there to some veterans of the Johnson administration. And the point that they all made is that this act has not gotten the attention it deserves as a element in the civil rights legislation of that period. You're right. The 1964 Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, the Fair Housing Act, those have always been seen as pillars of the civil rights legislation that emerged from that time. But they argued that the Immigration Act needs to be considered in that same light because, as Hubert Humphrey once said, we have removed all aspects of second-class personhood from our life with the passage of the Civil Rights Act. It's time now to remove all aspects of second-class immigrants from our national life. So he placed it squarely in the civil rights context, and I think that's where it belongs. Now, you asked what it specifically did. There was discrimination embedded in U.S. immigration policy up until 1965. Basically, visas were given out on the basis of your race and ancestry. If you were from a British extraction or Scandinavian extraction or basically anything from Northern Europe, you basically were welcomed into the country. If you were Asian or African, a Middle Easterner, it was much, much harder for you to come in. The 65 Act sort of put all nationalities on the same basis. That's why it should be seen as a civil rights act.
As I mentioned in the introduction, of course, immigration is a huge election issue. It's something that has been discussed and has been for a while. You point out in the book that while conservatives decry this act and say that it has produced more immigration than the country could handle, you point out that it was actually a conservative amendment to the original reform proposal that caused much of the influx that they are complaining about now.
That's one of the great ironies, and it's one that's not often recognized or discussed. You're absolutely right. The original proposal was to give preference to immigrants who had skills and training that would be considered especially advantageous to the United States. There was some concern on the part of conservatives in Congress at the time that the ethnic profile of the country might be changed as a result of this act. The national origin quotas that were keeping non-Europeans out were going to be done away with. So how could they maintain sort of the European character of the population if the national origin quotas were thrown out? And what they came up with was dropping in importance the idea of giving out visas on the basis of skills and training, and instead favoring those immigrants who already had relatives in this country. Family unification became the number one principle. They were thinking if you gave out visas primarily on the basis of your family ties, you would just bring in more of the same. You would replicate the national origin structure of the population. There was one conservative who actually wrote that this would be a naturally operating national origin system. What they didn't realize was that all the pressure to move to the United States at that time, the demand for visas was really shifting to the third world, as we called it at the time. And even though there weren't a lot of opportunities for Asians and Africans to come in under the family unification provisions, because they didn't have that many relatives here, all it took was one or two or three, you know, and gradually they could then bring in their brothers and sisters, their brothers and sisters' spouses, the spouses' brothers and sisters. And so while it took a few years for those new immigrant groups to get a foothold in this country, once they began to get a foothold, the numbers that were coming in increased exponentially and actually brought in more immigrants than if they had stuck with the original proposal, which was to give priority to those individuals who had skills and training that were most advantageous to the country. So it's really an example of an amendment backfiring.
There are a lot of numbers to talk about, and the post-1965 immigration numbers are fascinating, and you tell many stories about them in the book. In the limited time we have, I'd like to focus on the numbers from Asia and Africa, because they tell a very dramatic story.
Right. We have just learned this month that immigrants from Asia now constitute the single largest immigrant group coming into the country. They have surpassed Hispanic immigrants, who have really dominated the immigration into this country for a long time. So this gives you an indication of how much movement there is from Asia into the United States. The case of Africa is somewhat unique. You know, there were very few visa slots reserved for Africans up until 1965. But what's interesting is that even though there were only like 100 visa slots for people from Nigeria, et cetera, in many cases, even those 100 slots were not taken advantage of. And that's because it was hard for people from Africa to migrate. Second, during the colonial period, when many of those African countries were colonies of European powers, the migration pattern was to Europe. And then thirdly, once the decolonization period set in and there were independence struggles, there was a lot of violence throughout Africa, you know, the pressures to leave Africa dramatically increased. So you saw a major increase in immigration from Africa to the United States just at a time when they actually had more visa slots available to them. So, you know, it's a combination of the changes in policy that brought about this change in migration pattern and kind of geopolitical changes that affected the so-called push and pull factors, the factors that push people out of a country and the factors here in the United States that pull people in.
You certainly can talk about this particular problem with many issues, but especially when it comes to immigration, and that is that it always seems to be a fight. Do you believe that it always will be, that there will always be this concern and this political football that it has become?
Well, if you go look at history, recent history, whether it's in the United States or other countries, when there is economic stress in a society, when people feel insecure, there has unfortunately always been a temptation to blame the other. to find a scapegoat. And this often brings out ethnic conflict, ethnic tensions. It's easy to blame somebody who doesn't look like you, who seems different from you, who is clearly the other. And as our immigration policy brings in more and more people who look different, who have a different religion or a different cultural background, you know, I think, sadly, it probably is a problem we're going to have to deal with for a long time to come, that people will, you know, have a tendency to blame outsiders for their problems. And, you know, it's happened before. It's, you know, I stress in this book all the experiences that, for example, Asian or Hispanic or Muslim immigrants, for that matter, have encountered in this country. But if you go back to the 19th century, Irish immigrants faced a lot of prejudice and hostility. Jews have faced prejudice and hostility. Italians, Slavic immigrants. So it always seems like there is some group that you can blame for your problems.
As we close out our conversation, what do you hope people get out of the book, and what understanding do you hope they have as we continue to talk about this subject and debate it and vote on it?
The title of the book is A Nation of Nations, and that is taken from a Walt Whitman poem written well over 150 years ago, where he said the United States is not merely a nation, but a teeming nation of nations. Even though he wrote that in like 1855, something like that, it really wasn't true. I mean, we really weren't a nation of nations. We were largely a European country. Now we are a nation of nations. Now we are a nation that incorporates people from all over the world, from many different cultural backgrounds. And I think that these 50 years have demonstrated that this country has a remarkable ability to include people from different backgrounds. There is a resilience to American society that I think that we have underestimated. I think by and large, the record of the last 50 years shows that we as a society can incorporate in our ranks, in our culture, people from much more diverse backgrounds than we realized we could integrate. That, I think, is the essential message of this book.
The name of the book is A Nation of Nations, A Great American Immigration Story. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Tom Gelton, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks for your interest, Joe.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, A Nation of Nations, A Great American Immigration Story. It is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.